the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by nobody. I am here today by myself. Today's show is going to be a combination of two kind of typical show types that we do. I'm going to start by previewing Avery Bradley season, and then I'm going to finish by answering questions from the mailbag that we missed so that Pete and I are able to have a broader spectrum of topics or players to preview. However we want to handle tomorrow's show, we can handle tomorrow's show that way. Let's start, though, like I said, with Avery Bradley's season. I was doing research for this, and I find it fascinating that since the 2017-2018 season, where he started the year in Detroit and then made his way to the Clippers, that year, he plays 40 games for Detroit, shoots 41% from the field, not great, 42% from two-point range, not great, but 38% on five attempts per game from three. That's pretty good, right? He winds up averaging in those 40 games 15 points from the floor. He had 2.5 rebounds a game, a couple of steals, a couple assists per game, just over a steal per game. And not a terrible season. If he replicated that with the Lakers, I'd say it was perfectly fine. He then went to the Clippers and played for Doc Rivers, and, you know, again, only six games, and I would imagine in those six games he was hampered by injuries. But he shoots 47% from the field, which is better, but a whopping 11% from three-point range on 1.5 attempts per game. 11. I think I could go to a gym right now, shoot 10 NBA three-pointers, and maybe shoot. I'm saying this out loud, and as I'm saying it, I don't think I could. I take that back. But the point stands. He shot 11.1% from three-point range on only 1.5 attempts per game. Did shoot better from two-point range, 54.3%. But only averaged 9.2 points per game. About four rebounds, two assists, just under a steal a game. Not great, right? So the next year, he starts out the year with the Clippers, plays 49 games, started in all four of them, and averaged 8 points per game, just under three rebounds per game, two assists, about half a steal a game. But his shooting numbers were not great. 38% from the field, 34% from three-point range on 3.5 attempts per game, and 415 from two-point range for an effective field goal percentage of 45%. That's well below league average. I think league average is about 55 at this point. So not great. Not great. And then he shot 80% from the free throw line, but he only got there for half an attempt per game. Just not very good all around. And then he gets moved to Memphis, and in those 14 starts with Memphis, his points per game jumped all the way up to 16 points, double, twice as many points per game in Memphis as he scored for the Clippers. He shot 46% from the field, just shy of a career high. In 2011-2012, he shot 49.8% from the field. 38.4% from the field, or from three-point range, on 5.2 attempts per game. And then 54% from the field, 51% from the field, on 2.5 attempts per game from two-point range. So basically, what I'm saying here is, over the last 2 years, as long as he wasn't a Clipper, Avery Bradley was a perfectly fine NBA player. Now, you're talking about smaller sample sizes and different circumstances. In Memphis, that team's season was already over, so nobody was really playing for anything, and he was kind of allowed to do whatever the hell he wanted out there. But still, that's such a noticeable jump that it's hard not to look at it and say, I wonder what's going on there. And so I thought about it, and I thought about it, and I thought about it, and I wrote this actually for Silver Screen and Roll way back before Avery was born. And the conclusion I came to was, when you play for a coach, that coach is only going to think of you in like your best form, right? If you've had success with a coach, which Avery Bradley did have some success with Doc Rivers, when you play for that coach and you have success, they're going to think of the type of player that helped you have success back in the day. And as a result, unless they really, you know, go through some, you know, a rethinking process and they're really realistic about what kind of player you are the second time around compared to the first time around, they'll usually play you in a similar role to that got you success or allowed both of you guys to have success back in the day when you played for that coach. And I kind of think that's what was going on in with the Clippers. You saw that he started a bunch of games. He probably shouldn't have been starting for the Clippers, as any Clippers fan will tell you. He was asked to hound ball handlers when he wasn't really healthy, as he pointed out this offseason, which is another factor in why I think he might be better. But you kind of, and as a result of, you know, being asked to fulfill a role that he wasn't ready to fulfill, his entire production, I would imagine, dipped, right? If you're asked to, you know, without ever having any without having any experience on a barbecue, hey, please put together a meal for 15 people of filet mignon cooked absolutely perfectly. Also, we want you to handle side dishes and all of these things, and you aren't ready for that kind of a role. You aren't ready for that kind of experience. Well, guess how those filets are going to turn out? Guess how everybody's dinner is going to turn out? It's not going to be great, right? And so I really think that's what we saw from Avery Bradley, is he was asked to fulfill a role that his body wasn't ready for, that he wasn't the kind of player. When he played for Doc Rivers, that was 3 years ago. That was several injuries ago, and I really think that Rivers kind of screwed himself by having Bradley play in that role, and you know, now you have Clippers fans who, anytime you mention Avery Bradley, they're going to jump down your throats for you know, online, but I understand why they didn't like Avery Bradley. He was terrible for him. So it just becomes, if you're looking at the two spectrums here, with the two ends of the spectrum, where, okay, is Avery Bradley what we saw with the Clippers, or is Avery Bradley what we saw when he was in Detroit and in Memphis? And where along that spectrum does he land? If he's closer to the latter one, where he, you know, if he's on the better end of that spectrum, the Lakers got themselves pretty good value here. And he can play very important minutes, basically as the team's pseudo starting point guard, who brings the ball up the court occasionally and is asked to basically be the point of attack, the team's primary point of attack defender. Right, and I think that's where it kind of makes sense. If he is actually cooked and he is what we saw, what Clippers fans think he is, then the Lakers are really kind of screwed. So let's take a quick second here. When we come back, I'm going to kind of combine the segments of individual and team construct so that I have time in the third segment to answer your guys' questions. But we'll get to that here in a second. So one thing that when Avery Bradley was the player that Doc Rivers thought he was, even at that kind of the best stretch of his career, he was still a 6'2", 180 pound point guard. Right? He's a small dude. He's not very big. And when you're not very big, and you're asked to compete defensively the way that he was asked to compete, you can do so for a little while so long as you're at your absolute peak athletic prowess. But as soon as you slip even a little bit, and just ask Isaiah Thomas this, right, who, you know, it's a bummer to find out that he had thumb surgery today. All the best there. But just ask Isaiah Thomas. Just ask all the small point guards. Ask Allen Iverson. What was it like as soon as you lost even half of a step? It wasn't great. Right? When you don't have length, you are asked to be that much better of an athlete. And as soon as you slip at all, you're screwed. And, you know, if your coach doesn't note that slight slippage athletically and still has you out there playing defense the way that he was asking Avery Bradley to play defense, Well, that's where you get your body into even worse spots, where it's now, let alone, you know, trying to get back to 100% under ideal circumstances. But if you're pushing yourself like that and you are trying to get back to 100% and pushing yourself as hard as you have to push yourself, it's not going to happen. It just flat out isn't. And if you're doing that in, you know, say a couple contract years, or as you feel your career slipping away, that entire situation just kind of feels like quicksand, where the harder that you fight, the worse you actually start to play, to steal the analogy from Keanu Reeves in all-time great football movie, The Replacements. So, yeah, I think there is, and one of the themes that I've hopefully outlined for you guys in this player preview series is, even with guys who are hoping to have bounce back seasons, is there a realistic scenario here where they can bounce back? Was there a health problem that they're trying to get over? In JaVale McGee's case, yes, there is a health situation that he was trying to get over. He had pneumonia last year and was really good when he didn't have pneumonia. Weird, right? LeBron James, at the end of the year, when he said he flipped it into playoff mode, he wasn't 100%. So it kind of makes sense that there is a realistic scenario here where he can, even by his standards, have a bounce back year. Rajon Rondo, not the case, so we don't have to talk about him. But here with Avery Bradley, I think there is the scenario here where he can be closer to, maybe not exactly what he was in Memphis and in Detroit, where he played on bad teams with little to no expectations. You're going to, you know, have to play better when there are higher stakes around you. So I don't think he'll be what he was in Detroit and exactly what he was those 14 games in Memphis last year. But I do think that he'll be closer to that than he was, you know, what he looked like in LA for the Clippers, because Frank Vogel isn't going to go into the experience of coaching Avery Bradley having had prior experience where he now expects Avery Bradley to be that player that he coached back in the day, as I outlined in the first segment. I don't think that's what we're going to have there. Avery Bradley's also going to be surrounded by better players than he was probably in especially in Detroit and in Memphis, but arguably even in LA with the Clippers. Yes, that was a better team last year than the Lakers, but not exactly a high bar there, right? Seeing as the Lakers didn't make the playoffs. So can Avery Bradley, while he's surrounded by, you know, a Danny Green, who is a good wing defender and can help him apply pressure on the perimeter, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, same kind of thing, if he's actually locked in. Playing on offense alongside of LeBron James probably makes him a better player, right? Just hit spot-up three-pointers. I think he can do that. Playing, you know, I'm not really comfortable with Avery Bradley, handler of pick and roll situations, but if that is something he wants to try out, well, you could do worse than having a trio of Anthony Davis, Dwight Howard, and JaVale McGee as finishers on those pick and roll situations, right? So I think there's a realistic scenario here where Avery Bradley actually provides value to the Lakers. It's less realistic, or, you know, it's still realistic, but I think less so, that he's closer to what he was with the Clippers next year. But I do think there's reasons to be optimistic here with him, and really that's all you can ask for given what the Lakers are paying him, right? If he was really, you know, if we knew for a fact that he was going to be what he'd be in Memphis, or what he was in Memphis and what he was in Detroit, you know, three teams ago, then the Lakers wouldn't have been able to get him at whatever it is that they're paying him. I believe it was like a $4 or $5 million contract. I think what it comes down to is, you know, how close to decent value can the Lakers get from him? And yeah, they sign him to a 2-year, basically $9 million contract. And closer, yeah, maybe $10 million contract. So he's making $4.7 million next year. The Lakers wouldn't have him at $4.7 million if he was anything close to what he was in, let alone, you know, Boston. But if he's anything close to what he was in Detroit and in Memphis. So, yeah, if you're hoping to see from Avery Bradley, hey, be the team's starting point guard, average about 10, 12 points per game, shoot 36 to 38% from three-point range, play solid on-ball defense, and don't be a disaster off-ball as he has been when he was at his worst as a defender. If you keep yourself, if you limit yourself to that kind of expectations, that kind of a role, I think he can hit those expectations. He can fill that role. If you're asking him, hey, go out there and lock down the other team's best perimeter player and put him on lockdown and shut him down from anywhere up to 30 feet from the basket, and also come down and run the offense and do all of these things that maybe you were able to do for stretches in Boston, then no, he's not going to do that. It's going to be a disaster if you ask him to do that. But I think he's in the circumstance here where he can fit that former role and he can play for a coach who understands his limitations a little bit more honestly, not having had prior experience coaching him. I think Bradley might be in for a bounce back year. All right, let's take a quick second here. When we come back, I'm going to take your guys' questions. All right, so the first question here was a little long, right? I don't need to. If I get super long questions, basically I scan through them and paraphrase them. So the first question here was how the home crowd reacts to Dwight. And I've gotten this question before. I kind of go back and forth on it. Generally speaking, though, so there was a game, I believe actually it was that 2008 season, or maybe it might have been prior to that. I forget when exactly it was, but there's actually a game where Laker fans booed Kobe. That actually happened once upon a time. He played so well, though, that he was getting MVP chants by the end of the game. It's documented. I believe it's on YouTube. So check, just Google sometime, Laker fans boo Kobe Bryant. I think it had something to do with his trade demands or free agency or something like that. Sports fans in general are extremely fickle. Extremely fickle. What sports fans want is for their team of choice to bring them happiness. Make me happy. Take me away from my 9-to-5 job that I might not be particularly thrilled with. Let me encase myself and turn my brain off and root for my favorite team for a few hours, a couple nights a week, and make me happy for that time. So maybe Laker fans will start out a little dubious or standoffish with Dwight Howard. I could see that. If they are, though, and he plays well and he brings them happiness, guess how that's going to go? They're going to turn right around, and they'll welcome him with open arms. They'll call it some kind of redemption story, and everybody will move on, having acted as if that entire fiasco, the Dwightmare season, never happened. I think that's how that goes. So I think that you'll get a kind of an awkward response. You know, Dwight Howard enters the game. Maybe he starts, whatever it is, and they'll kind of, I guess I'll applaud. We're really happy because the Lakers are back more than anything, and Dwight Howard really didn't do anything that bad, I guess, to us. So we'll just focus on the fact that the Lakers are back, and LeBron James is on the team, and Anthony Davis is on the team, and the Lakers might be able to win a championship. And hey, if Dwight Howard helps them win a championship, then we'll really act as if none of that crap ever happened. And the jokes that we fire in his way, every chance that we get, those never happened either. We'll go back and we'll delete all of those. But if he enters the game, they give him that kind of lukewarm response, and he plays poorly, or he starts whining, right? If he starts creating problems, then they'll boo him. They'll boo him mercilessly, and he'll probably deserve it. Let's go. The next question here comes from a name I'm not going to read out loud. Love the podcast. My question to y'all is, do you think Kylo will be redeemed in episode 9 of Star Wars, and will Rey go to the dark side? I don't know if Kylo can actually be redeemed. Dude, like, killed, murdered his father in cold blood. Tried to do so, basically did so to his mom, if not for that miraculous floating back into the building moment that she had, right? He tried to kill Luke Skywalker and was perfectly fine killing Luke Skywalker, and lost his cool when he wasn't able to, right? So I don't think he's really redeemable at this point. And do I think Rey goes to the dark side? Maybe she'll kind of flirt with the idea of it a little bit, and you'll get that will she, won't she? And then by the end of the movie, she'll turn around and Star Wars will get a happy ending. With, like, hopefully better CGI ghosts than we got back in the 80s. Next question comes from CKF98. What would it take for Caruso to become... Oh, we answered this last time. It would take an opportunity that we aren't sure he's going to get. Nick A29 writes, what type of point guard is needed more? A playmaking pass-first point guard, a sharpshooter, or a pure scorer? Probably not a pure scorer. So... it depends on what kind of team that you have around that point guard. In my opinion, in 2019, given the caliber of wings that you have out there, give me Drew Holiday, right? Give me a big point guard who defends his position at an elite level, knocks down open three-pointers, doesn't turn the ball over, and basically makes it so that you know, if I have an elite wing on my team, if I have a Giannis, a LeBron, Durant, Kawhi, right? If I have that kind of a player on my team, I want that person to handle the ball as much as possible anyway, and I want my point guard to make that player's life as easy as possible. So that's the kind of point guard I prefer. Now, if you're asking me what kind of a point guard can be its team's best player and have that team win a championship, I'm not positive that player exists. Maybe it. You know, again, it always depends on how good his supporting cast is. Steph, you know, usually you say, yeah, Steph is just that guy. He creates insane gravity for everybody else on the court out there, and this and that and the other. And I've heard all those things. And maybe I'm a little old school here, but we've also seen him struggle to get shots off in big moments because he's not very big. And in basketball, size matters. So if you were to ask me, you know, if I was asked to design the perfect point guard to be its team's best player and win a championship with that point guard, give me somebody who's like 6'4", really athletic, can shoot, and obviously can handle the pick and roll, right? Give me that point guard. And then defensively, it doesn't matter as much to me. Just have them be able to defend just don't be a disaster on that end of the court, right? Get that player to care about defense and, you know, maybe occasionally hit the boards because it's a bigger point guard anyway and start the fast break. Like, give me that point guard. I don't know if that point guard exists right now, though, right? And that's why, you know, you go through teams that have won championships in recent years. They've all had elite wings. That's how it's gone. The point guard hasn't been nearly as important as the wings on that team's the team that won the championship there. So I can't wait to see Steph this year. I think he has a really good regular season, and then I wouldn't want to play him in the playoffs. He also just might be exhausted from the lengthy playoff runs that the Warriors have made over the last like 5-6 years. Last question here. Quantum Aviator writes, back during our championship years and even during our lottery seasons, there were certain teams that I would root hard, extra hard against, besides the obvious contenders and rivals, etc., etc. Is there such a team that I go into this year rooting extra hard against? Well, obviously the Clippers. I really want that rivalry to be something real. I hate everything that is the Houston Rockets. Everything about them. Not caring about team chemistry, just the the uber analytically inclined team that uses stats to make asinine statements like James Harden was a better peer scorer than Michael Jordan. Just shut up. Like, just nobody wants to hear that. All the whining after the season about, oh, we want James Harden should have won the MVP and this and that. Just shut up. Go away for a bit. We don't like you while you're playing. At least when you're playing, though, it's redeemable because you guys will do something cool every so often. But when all we get from you in the offseason is whine about this and whine about that and whine about this, nobody likes you. Just go away for a little while. That's kind of where I'm at with Houston. So I'll be rooting extra hard against Houston. Although I'll be rooting less hard against them than I have in previous years because Chris Paul isn't on that team. So you get that. Other than that, let's see, any other teams? The Sixers fans kind of annoy me on Twitter, so I'm cool with those guys kind of struggling. Other than that, though, I'm pretty ambivalent to most of the NBA teams out there. I hate the Celtics for obvious reasons. I don't want the Clippers to succeed because, for obvious reasons, I went over the Rockets, went over the Sixers. Yeah, that's about it. That's as far as I'll go there. That'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Thank you guys very much for sending in your questions. Again, continue to get those questions in as often as you possibly want, and we will answer them every time that we hop on here. We will be back at it again tomorrow, probably with a player preview. We just did a player preview today, so maybe we'll preview a matchup with a finals team. But for now, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. We'll talk to you then.